Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th Canto, Chapter 12, Text Number 6. Text Number 6. 13? Okay. 13, okay. Chapter 13, Text Number 6. Eat you shasharja swam deham. Nimir atyatmak kovitaha. Mitravaruna yor janye. Urvasyam prapita mahaha. Somebody could chant. Matijis. Okay, word meanings. Iti, thus. Utsa sarja, gave up. Swam, his own. Deham, body. Nimihi, Maharaj Nimi. Adyatmako vidaha, fully conversant with spiritual knowledge. Mitra Varunayor, from the semen of Mitra and Varuna. Discharged from seeing the beauty of Urvasi. Jagde was born. Urvasyam, through Urvasi. A prostitute of the heavenly kingdom. Prapita mahaha. Vasista, who was known as the great-grandfather. Translation. After saying this, Maharaj Nimi, who was expert in the science of spiritual knowledge, gave up his body. Vasistha, the great-grandfather, gave up his body also. But through the semen discharged by Mrita and Varuna, when they saw Urvasi, he was born again. Purport. Mitra and Varuna chanced to meet Urvasi, the most beautiful prostitute of the heavenly kingdom, and they became lusty. Because they were great saints, they tried to control their lust, but they could not do so, and thus they discharged semen. This semen was kept carefully in a water pot, and Vasistha was born from it. Nama Om Vishnubaraya Krishna Bastaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharne Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Vaskachate Shatarne. So as we see here, the curse, in the previous verse, they cursed each other to die, and thus they left their bodies, and Vasistha took birth again. He took birth again as one of the sons of Mitra or of Varuna when they saw Urvasi. So it says here they discharged semen, and this was the result. Also we have information in the sixth canon of Srimad Bhagavatam that the other son born in this connection was Agastya. Agastya was also one of the other brother like that. Formerly this was possible. They could preserve the children in this way, the embryo in this way, and develop the child. We even got information later in the ninth canon of Srimad Bhagavatam. Then when Sharadwan, he also saw Urvasi, and he happened to chance by see her, and he discharged semen on some Shara grass, and that became a boy and a girl named Kripa and Kripi. And Kripi later on became the wife of Dronacharya, the great teacher of the Pandavas. And also in this connection, Dronacharya also happened to appear in a similar way. His father was Bharadwaja, one of the great seven rishis, and he was taking bath in the Ganges, and he happened to meet Gritachi, another heavenly prostitute from the heavenly planets, and he also discharged semen. And that was kept in a water pot, and that so he became Dronacharya. So this was possible in Vedic culture. Even in other ways, like Prita Maharaj. Prita Maharaj was born from the dead body of his father, Vena Maharaj. Vena Maharaj, as we know, was a very powerful king. But because of his mother was the daughter of death personified, he inquired the bad qualities of his maternal grandfather, and he became very demoniac, and so the sages ultimately cursed him to die. The Brahmins were so powerful that just by their cursing, just like as we see here, this cursing and counter-cursing is going on. So Nimi, he cursed Vasistha, and because of that, he died, and Vasistha cursed Nimi, and he died. So they were very powerful formerly. So the sages, they cursed Vena Maharaj to die, but afterwards, there was great harassment in the kingdom. There was no protector, And so they were thinking, you know, what could we do? And they wanted the dynasty that Vena Maharaj appeared in to go on. So they churned the dead body of Vena Maharaj, and out came Prithu Maharaj. So in this way, he ruled the kingdom. And even 5,000 years ago, there was the Pandavas and the Kauravas, and before the birth of any of them, there was Kunti was pregnant, and so was Gandhari was pregnant. But Kunti gave birth first, so Gandhari was very upset with this, and she struck her abdomen, and out came a lump of flesh. But by the advice of Srila Vyasadeva, this lump of flesh was divided into 100 parts. So in this way, her ambition, Gandhari's ambition to have 100 sons was fulfilled. And even also during that time, we know of the pastime of Jarasandha. Jarasandha was born from two different mothers. But when his father saw that the two halves were useless, he threw them into the forest. But there was one witch there called Jara, and she knew the black arts, and she was able to put the two parts together. So in this way, Jarasandha came into existence. And, of course, in the beginning of creation, the system was that all the progeny came from Lord Brahma, which has come directly from his body. Just like we're reading here of Vasistha, Vasistha came from the breath of Lord Brahma, and his other sons came from different parts of his body. Daksha came from his thumb. Bhrigu came from his touch. And this way, his various sons were generated. So this was possible formally because they performed great austerities and penances. And if you perform penances and austerities, then you could achieve great power, whether it's spiritual power or material power. Just like Prabhupada gave the example of a Gandhari. She wanted to make her son strong. One of her sons very strong. It was Duryodhana. So she told him that you should come to me the next day and you become naked like that. Because she performed the austerity. She was a very chaste woman. And she would blind her. She knew that her husband to be was going to be blind, so she voluntarily covered her eyes with cloth. So in this way, she performed great austerities. And so her son was going to come to her the next day, and then Krishna, he knows everything, so he knew that what was happening. So he asked Duryodhana, "Where are you going?" I'm going to see my mother, you know. And he was naked at the time, and he says, "Well, you should at least cover your lower part, you know. This is not proper." And so he did that, and then when Gandhari took off her blindfold, then she said, "I told you to come naked. Why are you, why did you cover yourself?" "Well, Krishna told me to do this." So his whole body was like iron, but that part was vulnerable. So in this way, when he was fighting with Bhima, that he hit him with a club below the belt, and this way he died on the battlefield. So this is the strength of the power of austerity. And formerly they were performing all these austerities. They could do all these things, and now we can't imitate them, although the scientists, they try to imitate. They try to do test tube babies, or make a baby in a test tube, and artificially they develop in various ways. But this isn't the process. The process is, you perform certain various samskaras, garbhadham samskara, you chant mantras, you purify yourself. In this way, good children take birth. Otherwise, if you do something outside the garbhadham samskara, at best you'll get a sudra, you know, or who knows what you'll get by these artificial means. So we have to follow the natural process. Just like in a few verses back, we were talking about one should perform the natural, engage in natural processes. So in this way, we have to act naturally, and then things will turn out nicely. So here we find that the sages or the saints, they weren't perfect in their self-realization. Therefore, they became a lusty like that, and they cannot control their lust. So this is, people are very much entangled in this material world. They're very lusty. Men are running after women, and women are running after men. But one who is surrendered in Krishna, he is aloof from all these situations. Just like we have the example of a devotee as Dira, one who is not disturbed in any type of circumstances. And the example Prabhupada gives of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, he is undisturbed. His wife Sati, who because of her connection with her father, who blasphemed Lord Shiva, she gave up her body. She and wanted nothing to do with her father. She gave up her body. And then later on, she took birth as a daughter of the Himalayas. And during that time, the demigods needed a son to fight against, son of Lord Shiva to fight against the demons. So in this way, they had a Parvati approach Lord Shiva in order to get a son. So in this way, he was there meditating with, naked, and she went there and she touched his genitals, but he was not, he was unaffected. Because he is Dira, he's undisturbed. He's always thinking of Krishna. So one who is surrendered to Krishna, always thinking of him, he's not disturbed in any circumstance. Just like with the example, another example of Ramananda Roy, he saw himself as an eternal servant of Krishna. He would one of the things he would do is he would train dancing girls to dance in front of Lord Jagannath and show him how to dance, and it stated there that he would also massage all their bodies all over with oil and bathe their bodies, but he wouldn't feel any disturbance in his mind because he saw himself as a servant of the gopis, and he saw the dancing girls as gopis, and he saw them as their maidservants. So even though he had a male body, his consciousness was so pure that he wasn't affected. And even Lord Chaitanya said of himself, he said, when he was talking about this in connection with Ramananda Roy, he said that myself, I'm in the renouncer order of life. And if I even hear the name of a woman, what to speak of seeing her, there's changes in my mind and my body. So, of course, we know that Krishna is beyond all this, you know. Krishna or Lord Chaitanya is beyond all this. Even what Grandfather Bhishma, who is the greatest brahmachari, said that Krishna, he's undisturbed. He said he's in the midst of so many gopis during the rasa dance, but he's not disturbed. Just like, but I'm the great, known as a great brahmachari, but I cannot be undisturbed in such a situation. So Krishna, so many beauties come from Krishna, just like one who cooks, makes sweetmeats. He's not affected by sweets like that. He's not super anxious to eat a sweet. So in this way, Krishna is unaffected by so many beautiful creations like that. So Ramananda Roy, he was beyond all these things. And Haridas Thakur, he was also beyond all these things. Even he was tempted and various times. Once some envious person wanted him to fall down, so he sent some prostitute there to make him fall down, but he said, just wait, and I'll have to finish my rounds, and then we could enjoy. But he was just channeled the whole night, and she would just hear that. And in this way, so many nights she would come and hear the holy name, and in this way she became purified, and she fell at the feet of Har Das Thakur and begged for forgiveness, for she had some ulterior motive to have him fall down. But he took compassion upon her and gave her the holy name, and then he left that place. And after that, she was known, formerly she was a prostitute, now she was known as a great saintly person like that. And even Maya Devi herself, the illusionary energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, came at night to Har Das Thakur, and she tinged the whole atmosphere in a yellow effulgence. And she would display different bodily poses to Lord, to Har Das Thakur, that would bewilder even the mind of Lord Brahma. But Har Das Thakur was unaffected, because he was totally absorbed in thoughts of Krishna and chanting the holy name. So all her endeavors were simply like the crying in the forest. It has, nobody hears it. It just has no use. So later on, she after a few days, she said to Har Das Thakur that I am the illusionary energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I have come here to test you, like that. So formerly she was initiated into the chanting of Ram, and now she wanted to be initiated into the chanting of Hare Krishna. So in this way, Har Das Thakur told her to chant Hare Krishna like that. So Maya is enchants the entire world. People forget the ultimate goal of life, being dazzled by the attractions of the material world. But these attractions, material attractions, especially that of a woman, are meant for those who are not surrendered to Krishna. But those who are surrendered to Krishna, they are aloof. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya daratyaya mama eva ye papanyante mayaman etam tarantite. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is very difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. So those personalities, they conquer over Maya. They cannot be influenced by Maya. So this is Maya's illusionary energy. She appears in these attractions in the material world. No matter whether you're a man or you're a woman, these attractions are there. Like Prabhupada mentioned one lecture, he said, a woman means that which is enjoyable. And for man, woman is woman. And for woman, woman is man. So we should see it in that way. We should see these things as the allurements of the illusionary energy. We have to cross over this. We have to become free from this lust or desire. Kama means desire. And in Krishna consciousness, our Krishna conscious means desire without attraction. It's not that we give up all desire and become desireless, but we only desire for Krishna. It's not that we don't engage in sense gratification, but we engage in sense gratification. We want for Krishna's sense gratification, not our personal sense gratification. This is what a devotee strives for. And we have to be very careful. These are known as the three gates of hell, lust, anger, and greed. Arjuna mentions to Krishna in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that how is it that one is forced to act sinfully, even by force? How is this? And Krishna says that it is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material modes of passion and later transformed into wrath, and which is the all-devouring, sinful enemy of this world. So in this way, we become contaminated by contemplating the objects of the senses. One develops attachment. From attachment becomes lust. And from lust comes anger. So this anger comes from lust. Lust, or anger, is born of contact with passion and ignorance like that. So in this way, so many things develop. So everyone in this material world is lusty. From the ant up to the higher forms of life. The ant is trying to lord it over in his way, and the big politician is trying to overlord it in his way. But they're all lusty. It's understood that anybody who takes birth in this material world is lusty. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, all living entities are born into delusion, overcome by the dualities of desire and hate. So this is the illusion, this material world. And we have to change this lust into love of Godhead, because it's formerly it was love, and then it was perverted into lusty desires. Instead of serving the body, we want to serve the hand. In other words, like the hand, instead of giving food to the stomach, the hand wants to enjoy separately. But if he does that, he'll simply be frustrated. So we have to give it to the source. And in this way, we'll become happy. So this is possible by engaging in devotional service, by purifying our senses. Then we will develop all these good qualities. This lust will turn into love, and all the various good qualities will become manifest. And simply by the process of devotional service, like in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions various different qualities of a devotee. And he mentions how those who are like this and like this, they are very dear to me. He mentions how they're equal in honor and dishonor. A devotee isn't concerned whether I'll be honored or not. He's a silent worker. He goes on with his service to Krishna, and it doesn't matter if people recognize him or not. He's simply happy to please Krishna. Whether he's comfortable or not comfortable, that is not his concern. If Krishna wants it, I must do it. That's his only concern. So he's free from honor and dishonor. He's determined to engage in devotional service. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, the explanation is given there of the sparrow. The sparrow had its nest by the ocean, and the ocean took away her nest, and she was very disturbed, and she began to take water out of the ocean with her beak, thinking that I'm going to dry the ocean up and get my nest back. And people were laughing at her for her ridiculous endeavor. But when Garuda heard that his sister bird was in such a situation, he came and threatened the ocean to give back the nest. And so the nest was given back. So it says in that connection that God helps them who helps himself. So if we're determined, if we struggle very much, then Krishna will help us. We just have to do our best. We have to fight. Like Prabhupada mentions in connection with the temple in Bombay, how there was such a great fight, but we came out successful like that. So he mentioned there that if people come to fight with us, we must fight back. We must fight first. And depend on Krishna and give the credit to Krishna. Not that we think, I'm so powerful that I'm going to defeat this person. We shouldn't think like that. But we should do our best, and then Krishna will take care of things. So we should fight for Krishna. We shouldn't over-endeavor for material things, or just over-endeavor in general. We should do our service. Or if we're a householder, we may have to make some money to support our family. But as Srila Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavatam itself, he says that one shouldn't, as a householder, shouldn't work more than 8 hours a day. Not that he's working so hard to make money. No, we should, we should have enough time. We should take care of a family, but we should also have time to hear and chant about Krishna. Otherwise, our life is useless. It has no value. Simply, the hogs, dogs, camels, and asses, they're working so hard. But the human life is meant to search after knowledge of the absolute truth. So we shouldn't over-endeavor. And he also mentions about money. He says we shouldn't devotee doesn't over-endeavor to attain money. If money is offered to him, he'll accept it. But he doesn't over-endeavor to accumulate large amounts of money. And a devotee engages in good association. And by good association, he develops attachment for devotional service. He's enthusiastic. Devotee is enthusiastic. And Prabhupada mentions also enthusiasm in a letter he wrote to Yogeshwar. He said that you should try to just do one thing. Devote your full time to simply one thing, and then your enthusiasm and talents will get bigger due to them being concentrated. So in this way, we should be enthusiastic in this way, not try to do so many things. As Prabhupada also mentioned one saying once, he said, a jack of all trades, master of none. So a devotee is kind to everyone. He's not envious of anyone. Not like the materialists. They say they love their countrymen, but their country cows they send to the slaughterhouse. This is not kindness. This is simply foolishness. This is demoniac. A devotee is a silent. Silence means one only talks about Krishna. He's tolerant. He's forgiving. He's not an enemy to his enemy. If somebody is his enemy, he thinks that he's my enemy because of my past misdeeds, so let me just tolerate this. Better just to tolerate it. So he's patient, self-controlled. So in the 12th chapter, Krishna mentions so many of these qualities in so many different ways. Many times repeating them in various ways. And he said that Prabhupada mentions in there that repetition is necessary when one is trying to emphasize the point, important points like that. So it's important, it's necessary that a devotee develops all these qualities in order to become Krishna conscious. And so, in Krishna consciousness, our scope and resources are unlimited. Srila Prabhupada wrote this to Satsarupa in 1972, that our scope and resources are unlimited. So we should be enthusiastic, sober-minded, and responsible. So in this way, things will go on very nicely. Okay, so I could stop there. Are there any questions on any of these points? Yes, Prabhupada?
Prabhu, thank you for a nice class, a lot of Krishna Katha. My question is this. You gave Lord Shiva as an example of Dira.
Uh-huh.
But correct?
Yes.
Yeah, but in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, text 62, in the purport, Prabhupada gives him as an example of Adira. He says, Lord Shiva was deep in meditation, but when Parvati agitated him for sense pleasure, he agreed to the proposal, and as a result, Kartikeya was born. In the next sentences, it's almost like he's saying, in contrast, when Haridas Thakur was a young devotee of the Lord, he was similarly allured by the incarnation of Mayadevi, but Haridas easily passed the test because of his unalloyed devotion to Lord Krishna. So it sounds like Prabhupada's suggesting that Lord Shiva was, or Haridas Thakur was successful, Lord Shiva was unsuccessful. So how do you...
Well, it's sometimes, anyway, it's even Lord Shiva, I don't know, that particular quote, this is the quote that I got is from a lecture Prabhupada gave. I think it was in Los Angeles. I wrote down the quote here, the number. But he gave that example that he's known as Dira. He was mentioning it in one poetry he read in school about, I think, Kalidas. He wrote that about example of Dira, and he gave the example of Lord Shiva. And Prabhupada's quoting that in his lecture. So anyway, so that's some, you know, sometimes, well, anyway, I can't specifically comment on that, but sometimes even the same personalities, for example, are giving, for example, of somebody, example of somebody being bewildered, just like Lord Shiva himself, he became bewildered by Mohini Murti like that, and he ran after her, so, you know, like that. So sometimes... you know, one personality is given example of somebody who's Dira or not Dira, you know, like that. So they show different examples. But anyway, Prabhupada mentions that in that one lecture where he talks about how he learned, heard about this example of Dira when he was reading the poetry of Kalidas in school like that. Okay? Any other questions or comments on any of these points? Yes, back there.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, these qualities of the devotee that you mentioned, is it something that we try to develop, or is it a side effect of development of bhakti? Are they parallel lines that we should follow them in parallel, or we shouldn't emphasize on the qualities and...
What's that again? Well, Prabhupada says that in that connection in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that they automatically develop in devotional service like that. So just by engaging in devotional service, just like a devotee is automatically kind because he eats food that's only been offered to Krishna. So in this way, he's kind to all the animals. He doesn't kill the animals. He doesn't eat the animals. So these things develop automatically. But of course, you know, and also a devotee also has to follow the instructions of the spiritual master. So one of the qualities also here is, for example, purity. Krishna mentions one of the qualities of a devotee is purity, which Prabhupada defines as purity means taking bath at least two times a day and... purity means outside purity and inside purity. And that means taking bath at least twice a day and rising early in the morning performing devotional service. So one can see that as how do these things automatically develop is by following the instructions of the spiritual master. One doesn't have to figure out, I have to read some self-help book to figure out how to develop these qualities. One simply has to follow the instructions of the spiritual master. And the spiritual master says, okay, you should take a bath so many times a day. You should wake up early, attend Mangal Arati. You should clean your room. You should do so many things to stay clean. By doing that, automatically you'll become clean. So many of these instructions of kindness and tolerance, the spiritual master gives specific instructions on how to develop those. So one should follow that, and then automatically things will happen like that. Okay?
Thank you for a nice class, Rabindranath. Appreciate your... I just want to add one comment to the comment that you just made. Pardon? Is it too loud? Okay. Can you hear me now? All right. Thank you. A point I wanted to make is that, not to differ or to contradict what you were saying, it is more than just devotional service. There are different levels of devotional service. There are different developments from devotional service. Everybody who performs devotional service does not necessarily get the same result. And that's because when they perform devotional service, they also do it, different devotees do it differently. Some devotees do it indifferently. Some do it thoughtlessly. But let me preface this by saying all devotional service brings benefit. But what I'm trying to bring out is there are different degrees or different levels or different amounts of benefit according to the grace that Krishna bestows upon the devotee in connection with or in response to that service. So a devotee who performs devotional service indifferently or thoughtlessly or perfunctorily or carelessly, unlovingly, he will get one kind of a result. Another devotee does it very carefully, very thoughtfully, very warmly, very lovingly, very appreciatively, he will get a different type of result. So in regard to the question that was made, the person who I just mentioned as the second, yes, those virtues will naturally develop as a result of the grace that Krishna is bestowing upon that devotee who is serving with such affection and such appreciation. Whereas another devotee who doesn't really care about what he's doing, he's just doing it dutifully, he's just doing it thoughtlessly, he's just doing it as if he's doing the Lord a favor, he will get a different result. So he may not be developing any virtues for the time being until certain circumstances arise in his life which makes him realize what he's doing, how he's doing it, and as a result of that makes a change in his attitude, a change in his understanding, and a change in the way he performs his devotional service, which will then, as you mentioned, evoke or bring about the different virtues, the different qualities which, as Srila Prabhupada says, come automatically.
Yeah, that's correct. So, like Krishna, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly.
Yes.
So, if you you surrender to Krishna 1%, then that's how much he'll help you like that. And so it's, and when I'm talking, when I'm describing devotional service, you know, of course we understand there's different levels, but when it says devotional service, it was my understanding, when it's I'm referring to pure devotional service. That's ultimately it comes down to. If you don't, we should think pure devotional service. I should engage in devotional service. That means I should engage in pure devotional service, because otherwise you won't get the full effect like that. Okay, so we can stop there. Thank you very much. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga.